You found your place, will you please rise? And I pray that each one of you is prepared to hear the Word of God taught this day. I'll give you the speaker, Brother Glenn Orsted.
Good morning to each of you this day. I'd like to start this morning with putting forth a question for you that you should consider in your own lives and in your own hearts, and that is, are you too blessed? While you think about that, we're going to discuss that question today. For a text, I'm going to spend most of my time this morning in the 28th chapter of Genesis. Those of you who desire to follow along, if you want to find that and put your bookmarks or however you want to mark it there, we'll go to a few others, but we're going to keep coming back to that. So if you want to get that 28th chapter of Genesis set up. As I thought about what I present to you this day, I kind of think about a conversation that I, short conversation, a conversation I had in the workplace where there was something on television about some golf tournament somewhere and about Tiger Woods doing relatively well and being out of his slump. And I don't know anything about golf. I'm not a golfer. But a coworker was talking about that, and you know what was his big slump? And I guess there's like one tournament or a short period where he wasn't doing as well as he was, and he's this big horrible slump, and was it all over? And you know, he was always up on all the stuff, and he's talking a lot about it. And but here he is supposedly, I guess, playing well again and everything. And I thought, how kind of ironic or whatever, go figure. Here's a guy who's, setting all kinds of records, one thing, just has, a bad day, and, it's big news, and suddenly he's in this great slump, and all he's doing, I've had quite a few slumps in my life, and it's kind of strange that all of a sudden someone with such notoriety, and he gets back on his feet, but it's such great noteworthiness. It's amazing to me how popular golf has become in, recent years. Of course, as a Christian, I can't play golf, but, I simply don't have the vocabulary. The third or fourth time in the sand trap or the water or something like that there, fooey just doesn't seem to cut it, so. But I say about golf because that I read an article not too long ago, probably a while ago, in Reader's Digest. And it was about Arnold Palmer, who was big in the sport of golf for many, many years. And it was something he recorded about a lesson he learned about overconfidence. And it said this, and this is in his words, "It was the final hole of the 1961 Masters Tournament. I had a one-stroke lead and had just hit a very satisfying tee shot. I felt I was in pretty good shape. As I approached my ball, I saw an old friend standing at the edge of the gallery. He motioned me over, stuck out his hand and said, 'Congratulations.' I took his hand and shook it, but as soon as I did, I knew that I had lost my focus. On my next two shots, I hit the ball into a sand trap. Then I put it over the edge of the green. I missed a putt, and I lost the Masters. You don't forget a mistake like that. You just learn from it and become determined that you'll never do that again. And I haven't in the 30 years since." He'd been doing well. He realized suddenly there was a distraction and he lost his focus. And everything unraveled. He did well after that. I mean, he was able to retain his get his focus back, but it wasn't instantaneous. It takes a while to get back. Whatever happened in Tiger Woods, he got back, but it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't one bad shot, and then all of a sudden everything was back on. It took a while. I think perhaps it's one of the greatest spiritual disciplines we face is to keep ourselves continually focused on God. And I'm going to wonder, and we're going to speculate this day, that sometimes, all it seems ironic, whether oftentimes, well, His blessings don't sometimes make that difficult. Hardships almost always seem to make us look towards God. But oftentimes, I think His blessings tend to divert our attention elsewhere. So are the blessings of God always a good thing for us spiritually? Did Jesus say that we would only be blessed when things were going great and things were going our way? Well, he didn't. I'm going to just read a few verses here in the fifth chapter of Matthew. I'll jump around a little bit. Familiar verses. Matthew, the fifth chapter. I'm going to read verses 3 and 4, and then I'm going to jump down to the 10th and the 11th verses. The words of Christ, it says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake." He said, blessed are the poor. Blessed are those that mourn. Blessed are those that are persecuted. Blessed are those that are mistreated. Does the world view poverty, mourning, persecution, mistreatment as beneficial? No. You know, absolutely not. Things to be avoided. Things you don't want. Things you try to avoid. Things that you should get around. The world shuns these things. But Jesus teaches us that to the Christian, they can be instruments of God's work in our life. Jesus refers to these things not only as beneficial, but he referred to them there as Matthew's blessings, that you would be blessed because of these things. I think it's a terrible misconception among many believers that all hardship is a form of divine discipline, and that all good things are the result of divine reward. Probably everyone here is familiar with the story of Job. It's a narrative of a man who is described there in that first chapter, who was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed, which means shunned evil. Yet God allowed the devil to punish him with some of the worst kinds of suffering imaginable. His children were killed. He lost all of his material possessions. And then he found himself afflicted with painful boils all over his body. But even through the worst of life's suffering, Job didn't have a misconception of God's goodness. When Job's wife approached him and said, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." It's Job 2:9. Job replied with powerful words of faith. He said, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil?" And that word evil is kind of misleading in the King James Version. If you look in the original text, it means calamity or trouble. Increasingly, I'm beginning to realize that the events that God directs in our lives aren't always about discipline and reward. More often than not, they're about our relationship with Him. I'd like to turn to our text for this day there in the 28th chapter of Genesis. And I'm going to start with the 10th verse. Here in the 10th verse, these verses are a story that tells us about Jacob. And it tells us here in verse 10, "And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran." To kind of understand what's happening here, in this text, we find that Jacob's on the run from Esau. This is because under his mother's advice, he tricked his elderly father Isaac and stole Esau's blessing. You know, up until this point in Jacob's life, everything was going pretty good for him. You know, he enjoyed the comfort of living under his mother's watchful eyes, his father's patriarchal blessings. Before Jacob left home, you know, what did he know of God? Well, simply, he knew what he'd learned from his parents. But due to the wonderful blessings that his parents had received as being righteous and followers, he had very little reason to exercise any faith in God beyond that his parents had instructed him. In many ways, because of the wonderful blessings that his parents had received and the comfort that he had, that he received from those blessings in a wonderful home and being protected from the many things, In many ways, Jacob was too blessed to see God. But now we see that things are going to begin to drastically change in his life. Now he's no longer in the comfort of his home, under the watch care of his parents. He now becomes a fugitive. His mother is nowhere in sight to give him his advice, and he's far away from the securities of home and family. Continuing here in our text, 11th verse, it says, "And he lighted upon a certain place, and tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows, and he lay down in that place to sleep." It says, when he lighted upon, or in other words, when he reached, as it tells us, you know, a certain place. A place without name, unknown to him, unfamiliar to him, some place that he had not been before. A place of hardship. A place where he exchanges the soft, comfortable pillows that he'd always known for a rock. A pillow is a cushion for the head that you use to rest on. But in this certain place, there wasn't any comfort available. Many of you I know like to get outdoors and you'd like to see God's wondrous beauty. And I don't think there's anything quite as majestic as, you know, as a beautiful eagle. Probably many of us, either in real life or on some nature show on television or a photograph, you've seen a picture of a huge eagle's nest high up in the branches of a tree or in some little crevice in a cliff. But probably very few of us have ever, if any, have had a glimpse inside of an eagle's nest. Well, when a mother eagle builds her nest, she starts with thorns, broken branches, sharp rocks, and a number of other items that seem, you know, entirely unsuitable for the project of building a nest. Once she gets that outer lining of rough, sharp barbs and thorns, she then lines the nest with a thick padding of wool, feathers, fur from animals that she's killed, making the interior lining soft and comfortable for the eggs. By the time the growing birds reach flying age, you know, the comfort of the nest and the luxury of free meals make them quite reluctant to leave. That's when the mother eagle begins doing what these nature people that watch these things and study, and they call stirring up the nest. She begins pulling out the thick carpet of fur, the feathers, starts bringing those sharp rocks and those branches and those thorns to the surface. As more and more of the bedding gets plucked up, the nest becomes more and more uncomfortable for the young eagles. Eventually this and her urgings, the growing eagles leave their once comfortable abode and they move on to more mature behavior. No, comfort isn't the avenue to maturity. We see that example in the life of Jacob here. It's true in our own lives. It's true in the society of this nation that we live in. God had to get Jacob out from under his mother's care before he could rely on God. Out of the reach of her voice, the comfort of a soft bed or a soft pillow, God had to strip Jacob of all those worldly comforts before he could look to God. His desperation can cause our eyes to see things that, you know, we've never seen before. Going back to our text here, picking up in the 12th verse, it says, "And he dreamed. And behold, a ladder set upon the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, the God of Isaac. The land wherein thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with thee, and I will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. I will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." When Jacob was in the comforts of his home, how many visions of God did he have? None. How many times did he hear the voice of God speaking words of comfort and making personal promises? I'm going to look at what God offers Jacob here in that 15th verse. It says, I am with thee. Companionship. Though he felt alone, he would not be. I will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. He promised his safety, his watch care. I will bring thee again to this land. He promised Jacob that he would guide him. He wouldn't wander aimlessly. He'd have a direction and a purpose. And I will not leave thee until I've done that which I have spoken to thee of. And God puts his personal guarantee on it. Dropping back there in that 16th verse, it says, And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, Surely the Lord is in this place. And I knew it not. You know, Jacob wasn't expecting to see God in this certain place. He certainly didn't expect to find him in a place of hardship. He was surprised. But in this certain place, this location of hardship, this time of trial in his life, now that the blessings are stripped away, Jacob can see God. Now, God was always there for Jacob, but now for the first time in his life, he begins to realize it. Dropping back into our text here in the 17th verse, and it said, he was afraid and said, How dreadful. If you look up the original Hebrew word, rather than dreadful, I think probably a better translation there would be awesome. It said, he was afraid and said, How awesome is this place. There's none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Now Jacob begins to realize that God is in this certain place. It now becomes, as he describes, an awesome place. We all have our various struggles in our life, and perhaps right now, spiritually, you're in that certain place. Maybe the circumstances are getting the best of you, and you know you want to move to that awesome place with God. We struggle with all the concerns of juggling time with families and finances, and sometimes it can seem overwhelming. You wonder, you know, why? Perhaps God has called you into that certain place, a place that you can come to realize, as Jacob did, and realize how awesome it truly is. Did God make Jacob's circumstances better before he realized God was with him? No, he didn't. If anything, things got worse, because God is not in the business of changing our circumstances. He's in the business of changing us. What changed about Jacob was his perspective. He went from encountering hardship to encountering God. Going back to our text there in the 18th verse, it says, And Jacob rose up early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put for his pillows, and he set it up for a pillar. And he poured oil upon the top of it, and he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz at the first. The rock pillow that had been a symbol of his hardship now became a symbol of his worship. That which would have been hardship now becomes opportunity. Jacob's eyes that once were blinded by blessings are now opened by oppression. Now, this is the first of many struggles in the life of Jacob, and they had all served to strengthen his faith. Human beings seem to, by our nature, grow by striving and working and stretching. You know, in much of a sense, human nature needs problems more than we need solutions. You know, why are not all prayers answered magically and instantly? Why must so many people early into the gospel and converted travel through some tedious and treacherous path of their spiritual discipline? It's because persistent prayer and fasting and study and meditation are designed primarily for our sakes, not for God's. For it's said that, you know, Christians are much like, you know, schoolboys who want to look up the answers to their math problems in the back of the book rather than learning how to solve them themselves. We yearn for shortcuts. We desire the answers. But shortcuts usually lead away from growth, not toward it. If we apply that principle directly to Job, you know, what was the final result of the testing that he went through? Even greater rewards. He received even greater things than he had lost. And yet he was steadfast and sure in his faith. It's been said that faith like Job's cannot be shaken because it was the result of having been shaken. Back here in our text in Genesis for the 20th verse. It says, "And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat, raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I shall surely give the tenth unto thee." Jacob's methods had made him a fugitive. But now the fugitive who is running from his problems becomes a pilgrim journeying with God. But the journey with God for Jacob began when his comforts, his blessings were taken away. When you think about God's blessings, what do you think? What do you picture? Do you picture good health, sufficient money, good family, good relations? Is it only what the world considers good things? Are you willing only to receive good from God and not the bad? Do you believe that bad things only happen to bad people? If so, perhaps maybe you're too blessed to see God. Because the good things you have in your life are not obtained by your power. It tells us over in James 1:17 that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. And all these good things that God has given, He can take away if He so desires. And He will desire to if they will cause you to seek a closer relationship to Him. If hardship will cause you to look more diligently for Him, He'll do it. And it'll be a blessing. I read a story once by an individual. It was a little short little thing. The guy who wrote it was called Charles Simpson. I don't know too much about him, but it's an interesting little paragraph. It goes like this. It says, "I met a young man not long ago who dives for exotic fish for aquariums. He said that one of the most popular aquarium fish is the shark. He explained that if you catch a small shark and confine it, it will stay a size proportionate to the aquarium. Sharks can be 6 inches long, yet fully matured. But if you turn them loose in the ocean, they will grow to their normal length of 8 feet. That also happens to some Christians. I've seen some of the cutest little 6-inch Christians who swim around in a little puddle. But if you put them in a larger arena into the whole creation that God has given them, only then can they become great." Do you want to grow in your faith? Do you want to hear God? Do you want to see spiritual things like you've never seen before? So your first step is to recognize that God is actively involved in every aspect of your life. His goal is for your faith and your relationship with Him to grow. But if you think you can grow in a small, comfortable aquarium without any hardships, you're sadly mistaken. There are no shortcuts to spiritual maturity. God must stretch your faith and get you away from your worldly comfort so that you can see Him. We have to have our perception of blessings change from worldly things to spiritual things. The greatest blessing of all is salvation and so many wonderful things that go along with it. Forgiveness of sins, the protection, the guidance of God, peace with God, and the guarantee that He will never leave nor forsake us. I look around the nation we live in, I see a nation that has been too blessed. They've lost their focus on God. Those that have struggled before in depression, the depression of the 30s, great world wars, generated a nation of great faith and belief. And with that, God poured out blessings that the generation that followed now no longer can see God. The same thing can apply to us in our personal lives as a church. If the wonderful spiritual experiences, the visions, the revelations are lacking, perhaps we become too comfortable, become too blessed, that we're not in a situation of hardship that forces us to look upon God and to desire something greater and desire something better. And only each of you can ask in your own personal life where you're at. We have to realize that hardship and the good times are not necessarily, in God's eyes, reward and discipline. They're about our relationship with Him and what it takes to draw us closer. If you're in a time of trial, perhaps you're struggling trying to raise your family. Perhaps you're struggling financially. Perhaps you're struggling in jobs. The list goes on. You know what's going on in your life. Perhaps God is trying to draw you unto Him. Look at that as the opportunity. Jacob thought he had all those things stripped from him. Suddenly he's laying out there in the middle of nowhere with a rock for a pillow. And there he met God. And only having done so, then could the blessings come that he could fully appreciate and grow with them. You know, the other day, someone asked me how I was doing. Kind of a common greeting. How's it going? How are you doing? I didn't give it a whole lot of thought and answer, you know, the usual, okay, you know, I'm okay. But then for some reason, and I don't know why, you know, I was looking at my face, or looking tired, of course, you know, I was working, you know, riding around a motorcycle, 116 degrees, and dark blue polyester and stuff, so I'm sure the sweat was pouring off my face, and I looked about ready to pass out, so, you know, maybe he had a concern, you know, if he needed to call the fire department, I'm not sure, but, you know, are you really okay? And it caused me to ponder, and I wasn't thinking about it physically, though I think that's probably why he asked. He's probably asking, you know, physically, you know, are you okay? Do you need to go someplace and cool down or need some water? But I thought about that question more deeply. How am I doing? As I thought about it, you know, I realized, you know, I'm doing far better than okay. I'm doing great. And the reason I'm doing great is because I am not, I repeat, the reason I'm doing great is because I am not getting what I deserve. So oftentimes, you know, we look at blessings in our situation and we think there's things we deserve and things we should have, and that's how the world judges things, and great material possessions and comfort and big bank accounts and a decent car, and think those are the things that we deserve. Well, I rejoice in the fact, you know, that I am not getting what I deserve, because what I deserve is hell. But by the grace of God, the highway to heaven has been opened to me. I can think of no greater blessing. And however the journey and the course the Lord chooses to take me, and I hope that we all look and realize, and truly, this is what this life is. It's a journey to meet God. And sees each as an opportunity. And realize that when your faith is upon God, those things that He does in your life isn't so much reward because you did wonderful or discipline because you've fallen, but circumstances to help you in your relationship to draw closer to Him. And if He needs to strip you from your comforts, He'll do it. And that's a blessing, because He's trying to draw you into Him. I found in my own life that many times that's what He's had to do. And I cannot fully appreciate and comprehend how wonderful the great and the grand blessings He grants until He's taken many of them away, or I've had to struggle through many of them. And only then can I truly appreciate how wonderful and grand His true scope and His desire for our lives truly is. I look upon a nation that I see is struggling because it has been too blessed. What the Lord plans to do what hardships may come and whether it'll ever turn back, I couldn't say. But it's my prayer this day that those that hear my voice and are here in this congregation will realize those things, that it is easy to become too blessed, too comfortable, have too easy of a life, that you don't need to focus upon God. He can become forgotten and pushed aside, not fully appreciated. And if he needs to take away those comforts to draw you unto him, he will do so. And what greater and grander blessing could it be that a loving Heavenly Father, they'll do whatever it takes to, as that promise came to Jacob, to make sure that he'd be with him always, that he might return to his place and his home, which with us is in our, the eternal kingdom of God. Thank you.
In your places, will you please rise?